Well, thanks again for listening to the Park Hills Podcast. If you want more information on things we're doing, go to parkhillschurch.com or the Park Hills Church app. So I think one of the hardest parts of the generosity discussion for me was, and less so now, but it's definitely the thing that I'm still learning to really appreciate and fully understand. My job on this planet is to be a steward of what God has given.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which means none of it is earned by me, myself. And if we want to break that down, part of what that means is if I'm whatever I earn financially, whatever time I have, whatever abilities I have, none of those things came from me, myself, and I. They all came from Him. So for me to step back from that mindset and say, oh no, I'm actually completely indebted to Him in every possible way, and everything I have is on loan from Him or is given. So even my children, they're Heidi and mine, but they're not ours in the same sense that they're His. Yeah. My job is to steward those relationships, steward my time with Him, my time with them, in such a way that just keeps pointing them to Him. And that is true of my finances. That is true of my time. That is true of my energy. That is true of my gifts and abilities. And it's something I really struggle with. It just is. How about you?
Yeah, it's, you know, I have this like self-reliance mentality. I like to be able to do things myself. I like for other people to depend on me and me not to depend on other people. And so, yeah, it's easy for my mind to go with, I've built this, I've done this, I've taken care of this, I've managed all of this well. This is what I did. And therefore, because it's what I did, it belongs to me. So then I control it. I decide where it goes, when it goes, how it goes. All of those things. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, this idea of a steward, I think one of the best examples in literature of the steward is in the Lord of the Rings series. Mm. And yep. there's a great scene. It's in Return of the King, right? It's in the third one where Gandalf is bringing, he's got Merry or Pippin. I think it's Pippin, right? Yeah, I think it's Pippin with him. Maybe it's Merry, either one.
They're like the same character.
Yeah, send me.
They look alike.
Yeah, send me your email and let me know that I got it wrong.
Let's find out the Lord of the Rings fans in this podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
But they're approaching Lord Denethor, steward of Gondor. Yep. And we're actually reading these books with my kids right now, and the books really describe the scene well where they go in for the first time to meet Denethor, right? There is no king in Gondor. And so they walk into that throne room and there's this beautiful chair up on these steps. And it is clearly the king's chair, and it's white and it's amazing and it's empty. And in the small chair next to where the stairs begin, at the bottom of the stairs, there's a little chair and Denethor is sitting there and he's ruling from that chair. And Gandalf explains to whichever hobbit he has that Denethor is merely a steward. He even uses that word. Yep. And the book describes the scene in the same way. Big chair, little chair, all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, you know, what a great example of there's no king in Gondor right now. Somebody has to take care of it. It's the steward. So the steward acts as if he's the king. He has control. He has power. He does all these things. But nothing belongs to him.
Right.
And there's no right to any of it, and there's no his heirs are not going to inherit it, all that kind of thing. And in a similar, it's not a one-to-one, but in a similar way, when we think about all the things we have, yeah, there's this semblance, this idea that like I have control and I work for these things and and my decisions have effects on all these things, but really, ultimately, they're not mine. There is another king that all of this belongs to, you know, in the story of Lord of the Rings. It's Aragorn. He's coming back. He's going to take the throne back. But in my life, it's Jesus. It's God. And all this belongs to Him. And it's just this mindset of I'm not on that big throne. I'm in the little chair next to it.
Yep. Yeah. So when people say, you know, that song, Jesus Take the Wheel, for example, it's His wheel to take in the first place. it's so funny that so much of the Christian church sort of acts like that. Like, man, I just really want God to be in control of my life. You don't understand how this works.
Yeah.
And I find it interesting. There are times where even thinking about past episodes we've done, there's this idea, you know, well, God hasn't taken over that part of my life yet. There's a part of me that thinks he's going to do that in a lot of areas, whether we want him to or not. I think, and I don't mean that in an extremely predestination sort of way. Mm-hmm. I mean it more in, let me put it this way. One of the people that I've learned a lot from said it this way: playing chess with someone who looks at you and says, I know every move you're going to make and I'm going to beat you, versus the person who says, I don't care which move you make, I'm going to win. That second person is way scarier. And it gives the impression that you can do, that you have free will, but their chess game is going to beat you. Mm-hmm. And with God being all-knowing and all-powerful and all the things that he is, his story is being told. And he has relinquished some aspect of stewardship to us. There's things he wants us to do. There's ways in which he wants us to, quote, rule. There's things he wants us to accomplish. But his will be accomplished in the end.
Yeah.
And that is true in my life. That is true in our country. That is true in our world. There, even the really bad things that happen aren't him doing it, but they play a part in the big story that he's telling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this idea, I think, of, like you said, like the Jesus take the wheel, or I want God to, you know, reign over this part of my life. I think what's interesting is sometimes we say that in the sense of thinking it's like just going to happen. You know, like, oh, God has, God hasn't taken control of this part of my life yet, or Jesus take the wheel. You know, that song that we're making fun of is like a, you know, like, I'm going to let go and God's just going to like fix my situation. That's a song, and it's a silly song, and you know, I don't listen to country music, so there you go.
I just want to say the wrong artist just to be funny, but yeah, I'm not going to do it. I'm fighting all the urges inside of me.
I don't know that I've heard that song all the way through ever.
You're better for it.
Yeah. There was the, who's the country Weird Al guy? It's not Weird Al. It's the country guy, Cletus. Cletus does one. Yeah. No, his name's not Cletus. The song is Cletus Take the Real.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, man, we're getting way off here. I've probably heard that song more than I've heard the real song. Anyway, where are we going? it's just this idea that sometimes we think like if we're a steward, God's going to take over. It's just like a let go of it type of thing. Like, mm-hmm. I'm just going to like let go and let God. And I think if I be passive, God's going to change my heart in this or something like that. But that's not really how God works. Like, mm-hmm. there is a prayer, God, change my heart. But that means us conforming to his will, which is both God changing our hearts and us making the right decisions to say, yeah, if I really am a steward, if this really does belong to God, that means in my decision-making, in my daily life decision-making, I'm going to make different decisions. Yep. And that's cognitive.
Totally.
That's cognitive. That's me thinking, okay, in these moments of generosity, I can do this or I can do that. If I really want God to take control of my life, I'm going to make this decision instead of that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, I don't know, in my heart, sometimes I miss that. Sometimes I just think like, I'm just going to naturally want to be generous without actually examining my own heart and cognitively doing hard things.
Yeah. No, I like that. And I think I'm hearing less Jesus take the wheel and more lead me to do this your way. Is that fair?
Yeah. Lead me, change my heart, but also it's going to be hard. So help me make the hard decision when the moments come.
Yeah. Give me the strength and the courage to actually accomplish what you want to accomplish in my heart and in my life. You know, Jesus said it, not my will, but yours be done. That idea of this is a hard thing, but it's what needs to be done. Give me what I need here to do it. Yeah. And so when I think about stewardship and I think about generosity, again, that was one of the hardest things for me to learn. But when I started to learn it, you know, my family is mine, but it's not mine in the sense that I think it is. I'm stewarding those relationships. I'm stewarding my time. My job is not mine. It's being stewarded by him. My finances aren't mine. They're being stewarded by him. Yeah. Even the time that I have, I don't know if you ever have these moments. I'm sure you do, but I think you're in a time of your life where you don't get to waste any time. I'm in a time in my life where there's more time for me to waste. I just finished the doctorate. I don't, you know what I'm saying? I don't have any homework to do at the end of the night. I get all my stuff done and I know I've got more to do tomorrow, but the projects are going to be too big or I'm too tired. And I might sit and watch something now where I didn't 10 years ago or 15 years ago as much. Does this, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think what you're asking everyone listening to do is like give you more things to do.
No, that's not what I'm saying, but thank you for that. What I'm saying is there's this moment in my life where I'm kind of looking and I get convicted at times that I'm spending too much time wasting it.
Oh, I get convicted that way and I have no time for anything.
That's the thing is you with the five boys and a couple of the things that you've jumped into here in the last couple of months, you've got a lot going on. You have less time to waste, but you're still convicted at times that you're not stewarding your
time well. Oh, I still waste. I still don't steward my time well. There's still moments where I'm like, what did I just spend the last hour on?
Sure.
Like, yeah, none of that was productive or restful. We don't always have to be productive, but we should either be producing or resting and not this like mindless zoning.
I appreciate the lack of social media in my life right now. I'm actually, I feel like I'm using that area of my life more. I'm not, there were windows of time where I would go, how much did I just spend on this? You know, where I don't have that anymore. And it's really cool. I didn't realize how much I cared about that until now it's gone and I'm going, oh, all right.
Yeah.
But I can't guarantee that I'm always filling it with good things, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't mean I'm filling it with bad things. I just mean, you know, I might be watching a documentary and going, I should be writing my book, but I'm too tired to do that right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Does YouTube count as social media? Because some people say it is, some people say it's not. And I can watch an interesting video and learn something like,
sure.
You know, I love to watch videos of guys like fixing weird things on cars. And I'm like, oh, now I know how to do that. Will I ever do that? Probably not, but I know how to do it. There's a lot of things I know how to do now that, look at this guy. He's fixing this thing. Isn't that cool?
I do appreciate that about your mind. Your mind is more practical. There are things that you have learned how to do that you can just kind of do. Mark is the same way, Balmer.
Yeah, yeah.
When I spend time with him, he'll just dig into something and start doing it. And I go, okay, I don't understand that at all. But give me a textbook, have me read it, and then explain the intricacies of why it has aspects that are right, aspects that are wrong. I don't forget any of that stuff. Yeah. It's really weird how my brain works in that way.
But. Like I'm pretty sure I know how to break down a cow into all the cuts of meat that you could ever want. Have I ever done that? No. But I'm pretty sure I could do it because there's a really cool butcher who's got a YouTube channel who teaches you how to break down into all the cuts of steak. And I'm like, oh, this is so cool. And then there's a lot. Anyway.
But okay, but with that said, if a zombie apocalypse ever occurs,
bring your cows to me.
You are way more valuable to the people that you are walking through this journey with than I am.
Well, yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
But I don't mean to say, yes, I am more valuable.
No, you trust me,
definitely are. I'm saying, yeah, that means nothing. By the way, Tim Hawkins is Cletus Take the Real.
Tim Hawkins?
It's Tim Hawkins.
Not even really a country singer.
There was that country singer who was like the country version of Weird Al.
I'm trying to remember if it was Bubba Sparks or something like that. There's a few guys like that had these weird names, and I'm like, what in the world is this?
It's Cletus Take the Real.
Tim
Hawkins. Tim Hawkins. Love Tim Hawkins. Solid, oh, that's so cool. Anyway,
solid guy.
Just thought I'd throw that in there.
There you go.
We're talking about integrity. Is this the integrity podcast? Oh, man.
No, we're on stewardship.
Stewardship. That's the one we're talking about.
No, we're good.
So we were going to talk about some maybe poor examples of generosity or poor examples of stewardship. Got any of that come to mind?
There's a ton that are probably more out there than people would realize. For example, very few people know that a lot of the generosity that Americans have pursued over the years ended up having more malevolent background to them. So there are certain individuals that used their wealth to sort of corner the market on certain things. So, for example, John D. Rockefeller gave a lot of money away to America, and everyone's always like, what a great philanthropist. A lot of the money he gave away actually pushed certain reports and changed the dynamic of like the medical and the food system in our world. And plastics ended up being used way more in those ways because of that. And plastic has a direct, plastic comes from oil. I mean, it is a byproduct of oil. And so here's the guy who's the oil magnate, right? This massive tycoon of oil who uses his tremendous wealth to sort of, people would look at it and say, well, look at this great philanthropist. And he used some of that to kind of push other people out of the market and then ended up using the byproduct of his product to influence some food decisions and some other things, which weren't necessarily good for Americans, to the point where now, you know, the rumor is that we eat a credit card a month or something of microplastics in our body, I don't know if any of that is totally true, but it's one of those things that are like really interesting to me to think of people who have tremendous wealth. And I would suggest maybe don't steward it as well as they could have.
Yeah.
What do you have? Yeah. You have any stories that pop in your mind?
Yeah. I have just an interesting, funny one. This, I pulled up a Time Magazine article from 2010. So this was a while ago. I remember, his name is Jason Sadler. You can look him up. Look up the story. It's interesting. He was that guy who did that "I wear your shirt" thing. Do you remember that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. He basically, what he did was this was in the early days of influencers. Influencer wasn't really a word right in 2010, but he wrote to all these companies and said, if you pay me, I think he did $1 per like day of the year. So January 1st was $1. January 2nd was $2. All the way to December 31st was $365. He said, if you pay me that amount of money for that day, I will wear your t-shirt for the day and I will make a commercial pretty much on my YouTube channel. And this was very, you know, YouTube was very new to this, but this guy got a little bit of notoriety that he was getting all these t-shirts and then posting a short video talking about the company. And so he got hundreds and hundreds of t-shirts. So then he had this idea that he wanted to collect 1 million t-shirts and send them to an unspecified country in Africa. And he's like, let's do this charity. Let's get 1 million t-shirts, because he was getting 365 t-shirts a year over the course of a couple of years doing this. He had, 1,000 t-shirts. He's like, let's get 1 million. Let's send them over there. And I don't blame him too bad. He was like in his 20s at the time. I think his heart was in the right place as far as trying to help people out. But basically what he ended up doing was like destroying the local clothing economies of wherever he ended up sending 1 million t-shirts. Like, does the place he ended up doing it, do they really need t-shirts? Maybe they do, maybe they don't. It's just kind of that ethereal, like, oh, people in Africa are poor. And not even to like have a specific country in mind, just like Africa is a big continent. You're like, oh, people in Africa are probably poor and they probably need t-shirts. So I'm going to send them and make me feel. And so a lot of backlash. He apologized. I don't blame him too much. But it is kind of one of those things where it's like not well thought out generosity.
Sure.
I mean, probably naivete in his part. But I think in the same way, we can kind of do things like we think, oh, I'm going to be generous, when it's more of what we think would be generous than maybe what an actual need is, because an actual need is not something that's easy for me to do. So I'll just be generous, but not actually helpful to the person that I'm trying to be generous toward.
That's good.
Yeah. It's just a good reminder that sometimes true generosity, the level of sacrifice means it's hard on us. Mm-hmm. And I think like in his instance, maybe it was hard to get 1 million t-shirts, but it was just like, oh, this makes sense to me, but I haven't really thought through like something harder. And so I think sometimes we either donate time or money or emotional effort or support when it's like, it's all on our end. We're not really looking at the needs of people that we're serving.
Sure. Well, and to that extent, I'm going to leave these very blank so that nobody can pin me down on any of this. But I have so many pastor friends around the country who have had somebody in their church donate a large amount and then expect the pastor then to do what the person's asking for. So it could be, I've heard stories of someone who comes and pays for a parking lot to be not only completely repaved, but, you know, torn down to the gravel and started over because the church needed it and because it would be good for the church. And then, you know, then it was sort of a, well, pastor, you need to do this. Or I've had a friend, I should say multiple friends who someone has donated like a wing of the church or multiple things and then expected preferential treatment during a divorce or during. So it's interesting that the point that you're bringing up is great. You know, my original sort of this darkened philanthropy that happens sometimes in the church, what happens is you expect it to be a power play. Yeah. You think because I'm doing this now, the pastor should appreciate me more. So therefore, which I love about Park Hills that we've never had that. We've never – the funniest illustration of anything weird around here was that communion plate that Mark brought up on stage during the sermon of, you know, it was – the communion plate was etched with in memory of a family member. And it was like, that's really strange because we're remembering the Lord here and yet this is like donated to this family.
Yeah.
It was a weird
– Yeah, it is. One of the struggles I have with that is – then in those instances, the amount matters, like the amount is compared to other people's amounts. And I think Jesus is pretty clear with his parable of the widow with the two coins, the two copper coins or whatever translation, the mites.
Right.
It's always the widow's mite.
Yeah.
Right. That he says she gave all she had. Mm-hmm. And I think in NPO or not, you know, nonprofit organization culture, if you are a big donor, it gets you certain, you know, rights, privileges, extra things that, you know, you're the gold sponsor, the platinum sponsor, the super gold platinum sponsor, or, you know, we got a room together with all our top donors and thank them by giving them this, or, you know, you get this. And I think in the church, I don't want to set a precedent, you know, and even as we look at the Multiply campaign, mm-hmm. I don't want to set a precedent that, you know, the top dollar amount donors get some sort of special treatment or thing. Not to say that we're not thankful for that, totally. But to say we are just as thankful and we see just as much sacrifice in the person who has little to no margin but trusts God with that margin and says, you know, I am living paycheck to paycheck. This is my reality. But even so, I'm willing to sacrifice certain aspects of my life that I enjoy spending this money on to give it to the greater mission here. You know, so I've kind of seen that where, and I think, where's there, I think there is value in appreciating people.
Yeah.
And NPOs that aren't churches, like, it's fine. Like, they can do that. You see, you know, big organizations that do work of religious and even non-religious nature that, you know.
Right.
Oh, we brought all our top donors, put them on the private jet and flew them here and had this big thing to say thank you for all. Yeah, okay. But in the church, you know, I think that's a bad precedent to set.
It would be a bad use of those funds.
Yeah.
And I think the stories that I most appreciate, sort of to end it here, is I like it when an organization goes to honor someone who gave a large amount and that person says, I didn't do it for this, I did it to honor the Lord. And they don't take the gift. I'm like, that's pretty cool.
That's so great.
I'd rather us live like that. Mm-hmm.